Welcome to Ugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Mary Jo Bowser. I am in Business Radio X Studios this morning, August 4th, with Sam Grass, our producer Lee Cantor, and our new friends from Aberdeen Place Hospice. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
We're going to let you do that every time. You've done that very well. You just found yourself a job.
So the story is, I was a smart aleck and I was giving my boss a hard time this morning. And so he said, okay, you can just introduce the show then.
Well, you have a great radio voice.
Oh,
I love it.
Thank you. I love it. More. Okay. Hey, this morning we have, and I hope I say these names right, Josefina Bates, the new community relations lady, business development lady for Aberdeen Place Hospice. And we have Denise Luco, who is a registered nurse and the administrator for Aberdeen Place Hospice. So thank you so very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. As we normally do, we start out by just asking you two to tell us a little bit about yourselves, maybe where you're from, where you went to school, what your background is, and how you got to Aberdeen Place Hospice. So who wants to go first?
Let's begin with Denise.
Okay.
Well, good morning. My name is Denise Luco, and I have been a nurse for 35 years. I grew up in the Midwest in Nebraska and Colorado, and I went to nursing school actually in Florida.
Where in Florida? University of Florida?
No. We're a Florida State house. Sorry. My daughter and son-in-law went to Florida State. I went to a small community college in Bradenton.
Okay.
So it was a good experience. I moved back up to the Plains State, and I've worked in newborn nursery and neonatal intensive care for about 29 years. After that, I had done some home health intermittently and then went to hospice. I'm a beginning and end person. I'm not a middle person.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
I am not a middle person. Middle people.
And you say that with conviction.
I am. I in the beginning is great. In the end, I don't want people to take it the wrong way. I love being with the families.
Yeah.
It's just something that.
It's the circle of life.
Exactly. And God's given me the ability to do that, and so I really enjoy
I think it's a neat combination. I really do.
It's a neat comment too, and to know that, you know, to be the escort into life and out of life, I think is a great honor and a great responsibility.
Absolutely. I started almost 6 years ago at another hospice here in Atlanta, and there I started working with Joe Sturm, and she is one of the owners of Aberdeen Place. It's been almost 2 years ago now that we got started, and it's been a interesting road to start from scratch, but it's been good. Our hospice has a different name for the Atlanta area. We aren't a peach tree anything. We aren't a mill anything. We're a Aberdeen Place. And it's interesting. Joe, Jim, Mark, those are our board. They grew up on a street in St. Louis by the name of Aberdeen Place. And they had a real community there, which we all had many years ago. People weren't as transient. And they all, families looked out for each other. And so that's why we felt that was a good name for our business. Also, unbeknownst to us at the time, I grew up about 7 miles from them. We were in St. Louis for a while, and so I only lived 7 or 8 miles from them while they were in St. Louis. It was pretty funny.
That's pretty
when
cool.
We got together and found that out. But it's been good. And that's our biggest mission is to treat. I'm not saying our mission statement correctly because I don't know if anybody ever actually memorizes their mission statements. But our mission is to take care of not just the patient, but the entire community of that patient. Family, caregivers, friends. You don't realize all the people involved in someone's life until you get to that point.
And there's so many people that it touches.
Exactly.
Doesn't it?
If they're living at home, they may have private caregivers, and they're, you know, with those patients every day, all day long, and they get attached. Same thing with assisted living facilities or personal care homes, nursing homes. The caregivers get attached. And they're, you know, used to seeing these people every day, and they grieve too and go through a process with death and dying, just like the family members and the patient. Usually the patient's the easiest,
you know,
one to
truth?
Do. Mm-hmm. That's what Aberdeen Place is about. We are about the patient first, of course. But then right behind them, the family and the caregivers.
Denise, it's so interesting that you mentioned that the community is of such importance. And I don't want to overstate it. I don't want to say it's more important than the patient. But we find in our business that the exact same thing. And I'll tell families, you know, our business is built upon a relationship. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm usually around the family, and I'll look at the patient and I'll say, obviously, the relationship that they have with you is vitally important. And especially if there's a wife then sitting in the room.
Right.
And I look at her and say, but the relationship with you is probably more important. And it really is. The relationship with the community is as maybe more so important than the relationship with the client. I don't know why, but it is. I'm sure there's some you know, psychologists that can explain that, but it is.
Well, I've lost patients that have been very instrumental in caring for others in their community. Mm. And when we look at someone in their senior years, we forget the footprint that they've left. And that's something we need to remember, is that these people have left footprints. And many of them are huge footprints.
And to try to, like, celebrate that.
Exactly.
And remember that with the
exactly.
community. What a great perspective. I mean, you know, we work alongside hospices often. And
correct.
It's our hope that we'll get to do that with you all as well. But Sam and I were talking months ago about doing this. We were going to enter in a real partnership. And it's scary. I mean, it's scary to think about the caregivers having to, you know, stay with the body or whatever till the next caregiver gets here. And all. But just the perspective that you have is so different. And it must carry you through a lot of those hard things.
Last night I was with a family and we had a patient that passed, and just to sit there with them, and to be able to remember the patient and to laugh and to remember the great things about that particular person. I learned a lot. I think that that's something that we forget sometimes, is how much we can learn from our seniors. And I'm afraid that that's something that we're missing in the community, is teaching our younger children, our younger generations, that they have so much wisdom. They think that they know everything, of course, but it's like nothing new under the sun. There's not really much except for technology that elderly people haven't seen.
Unfortunately, though, it will take the youth of this nation to be about 40 to 45 before they really come to embrace that. They'll start to learn.
I think so, but I agree partially, but I think that it's a responsibility as parents and grandparents to expose our children to elderly. My granddaughter's 14. She belongs to a group. It's called National Charity League. And those girls go to nursing homes. They go to assisted livings. They sit and play bingo with people, read to people. And these are 13, 14 years and up. Mm-hmm. And they need that. they need to develop those relationships.
The kids need that, yeah.
Well, we don't have that anymore because we're transient.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't all live with our immediate families.
No, and our grandparents. That's
and
so true.
And so that's why we're missing it now. And I think it's a, that's our rabbit hole. Sorry.
I concur.
Now, Denise, you mentioned that you find that a lot of times it's the patient who is the most at peace with what's going on. Can you speak to that a little bit about maybe some tips for managing this from the family standpoint?
I think that sometimes family and caregivers, out of the goodness of their heart, think if they don't talk about it or they don't acknowledge with the patient that they're passing, sometimes they'll say, oh, don't mention you're from hospice. I can guarantee you they know we're from hospice. And not even by our badges. They just know. And by not allowing them to verbalize their feelings, it doesn't allow the families to know that their patients are okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes those patients will be much more open with the our certified nursing assistants,
the workers,
or the private caregivers, because no one else is in the room.
Right.
And I've had them say, they don't think I know you're from hospice, but I do, mm-hmm. and it's okay.
Now, for the listener that isn't aware of hospice, hospice isn't something that has to occur like the last day of a person, right? Like a hospice relationship could go on for months, if not years sometimes, right?
Absolutely.
Good question, Lee. Yeah, back it down and tell us a little bit about hospice and what they do in general.
We have, hospice is end of life. We do all sorts of care. By end of life, we mean, this is the government's, CMS's definition, is that the physicians feel you have 6 months or less to live. Now, I mean guesstimation, because no one knows. And sometimes it can go on for longer. We have very strict criteria of who can and cannot be admitted to hospice. We have... there's a whole list of determining factors with each diagnosis that lets us know whether that patient's ready for hospice or not. If they're not, if a nurse comes out and does an assessment and you're not quite ready yet, they're going to let you know that and let the families know what to look for and let the doctors know what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what should be done. If you are ready for hospice, we talk to you about it, what's involved. And we're there to support people through the last, hopefully not just days, hopefully we have them admitted before that, but through the last weeks and months of their life. And we are there to support. We are not there to hasten. And I think that's a
misconception
is that hospice is there to hasten someone's demise, and we are not.
Why don't you talk about that in terms of some of the services you provide the patient as well as the family, because you are serving both constituencies, right?
As far as the patient, we provide some medications if they're...
pain management mostly,
pain management,
right?
But other medications if they're related to their diagnosis.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that. I thought
we
they,
do.
I didn't know that was allowed. Okay.
We do. Our hospice is not the business of taking things away. We look at the patient as a whole and make that determination what patient needs to stay on and what maybe is a little bit of excessive medication, which sometimes that helps a patient actually be more alert and feel a little better. We're there to provide personal care, whether that means just that we're there to help someone take a shower, so that they don't feel like they're going to fall or something like that's going to happen where a family member might be injured trying to hold on to them or pick them up, whatever. So we're there to do patients' personal care, medications, be that liaison between our medical director and the patient. Also, some of the referring physicians like to stay involved. They may not want to be an attending, but they want to know what's going on. That happens a lot with oncologists. And so we keep them updated as to what's happening with the patient. So that's pretty much what we do is meet the physical needs of the patient, also emotional. We have social work and we have chaplain. Social work's not what we hear about social workers. We think of kids and families and welfare and all this, and that's not what social work is in hospice. It's to help the families obtain any kind of help that they may need, help with papers, help with end-of-life decisions. They're there to be a support system. We have chaplains. Our chaplains are great. They can morph to most anybody's religious background or lack thereof. They're just there to help the families cope, help the patient cope. Sometimes patients get frustrated with family members, families get frustrated with patients, and sometimes that social worker or chaplain can kind of bridge that, and they're great. They're a great help.
So it is a spiritual emphasis.
Exactly.
But they do they try to get to know the family and what their
needs absolutely.
Are and kind of maybe do some research or familiar. I know there's a lot
Whatever
of different death customs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And our chaplains are really good at that. And in fact, we just had a funeral home come and talk with us about different burial customs. And that was very helpful. So we have actually a list. So because we've gotten to be such a diverse community
Culture.
In here in Atlanta, that we need to know what people expect and what we need to do at time of death, because that is very particular to someone's belief system, or again, lack thereof. I mean, we have to cover everything, but, we're there to support. And the same thing, they offer that same service to the family member as to the patient. We also have gone in the past and done bereavement in services for ALFs or personal care homes. Sometimes they'll lose 3 or 4 patients in a week, and they're often unexpected. It takes a toll on them. It's like they don't want to come back to work. They're afraid to come back. And you can't blame them. They go through a grievance also. So we try to help help facilities with that.
Whoever the caretakers are, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Denise, speak, if you can, to the situation of assisted living, independent living communities. And you just mentioned that there are times when there are multiple deaths in the course of a short period of time. I can understand how that impacts the employees of
exactly.
the assistant. But how does that impact the other residents? I mean, does it not have the same effect on the other residents?
It does. I get kind of tickled sometimes, though, because it'll bother the staff and family members, and they think that the other residents should be bothered more, and they're... You know what, kids? We're in our 90s. Life goes on.
They've kind of resolved it.
They're kind of there to pat you on the hand and say, you know what? It's okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It probably depends on the community, too, doesn't it?
Exactly.
I mean, I'm sure that they all have their own personality.
Oh, they do. They do. But most of the time, they're pretty open, as much as HIPAA allows them to be open. But we give them an opportunity, and I know the staff, the ALFs that we work with in personal care homes, their staff is really good about letting other residents, verbalize feelings and let them know kind of what's going on. And one particular one we go to always puts a really nice picture of the patient that's recently passed up so that everyone knows, and like a little memorial. And I think that's helpful. But it is kind of humorous that we're all sad and afraid they're going to be overly sad. And they're like, really? Yeah. Okay, kids.
So tell us about your young friend here. How she's new to Aberdeen Place Hospice, right?
She is. We are very happy to have her with us.
Thank you.
And she's out, getting our message out to families and facilities and physicians, and That's what we want. And we're very happy.
What's your background, Josephina?
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
So I am originally from New York City. Go Giants. Mm-hmm. And by way of Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Yes, Puerto Rico. So I moved here about 11 years ago. I've been in the hospice industry on and off for about 10 years. The off parts are when I've had my children and I've taken some time to be with them. And the way I found Aberdeen Place Hospice, I decided to get back into the industry. And I was looking for a smaller hospice with a more family-oriented feel. That was very important to me. I've been with larger corporations, and although they all try to spread the same message and the same type of service, I wanted something where every single person, whether you're the CEO or the operations or the nurse administrator, was involved, would come out with me. And that's exactly what Aberdeen Place Hospice is. When I tell you, when I'm out there in the community, and this isn't always the easiest position because of all of the stigmas behind hospice, and to have that support is just amazing. Every luncheon that I've had, I have had either one of the owners with me. And today I have my amazing nurse administrator. So I have never been with a place, a hospice company, that has offered so much support all. It's always just do or die, figure it out, you know? So this is amazing.
Josephina, you've been doing this for quite some time.
Yes.
Why? What draws you to that?
You know, I feel like it is truly a mission. You have to be a special type of person to be in this industry, because you are dealing with the most difficult time in a person's life and their family. I started in New York with a hospice called Jacob Perlow Hospice with Beth Israel Hospital. And I was doing more so intake, just getting the information and coordinating everything. And then when I moved here, back in 2004, I was actually a social worker. I'm actually a social worker by trade. I went to Syracuse University and majored in business and healthcare administration. And then when I moved down here, I obtained my MSW at Clark Atlanta University. And so I was doing social work at a nursing home, and I was always getting providers. And of course, I'm a huge advocate of hospice because I was in it. I understand the philosophy. I understand how amazing it is, and unfortunately, how underutilized this benefit is that is given to us. And so I was approached to come on board with a certain company, and I decided, you know what, let me try it, but more so of a sales business aspect. And I loved it. I love what it was about. I love the fact that I can sit with a family and comfort them, and the fact that I have the background in social work and the business, it's like the best of both worlds. I understand the business aspect, but I also understand the holistic aspect, the emotional, spiritual, and physical aspects of hospice and what we do and how that affects the family and the patient. Because when it comes to hospice, it's not just the patient, it's the family. So whoever that family is, whether it's a niece, whether it's a daughter, whether it's a brother, whether it's the nurse at the nursing home or assisted living facility, we try to make sure that we take care of everyone.
The community.
Absolutely.
As Denise said. Mm-hmm. So you're new, but that... So you're new, though, with Aberdeen Place,
I'm
right?
I'm new with Aberdeen Place Hospice. I am extremely happy and excited and have been spreading the word. But I'm not new to hospice.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe off air we can figure out how to link up and get the word out together.
I would love that.
Education's the big...
Absolutely.
Big missing link. Yeah, I guess we'd say.
And speaking of education, can you share some of that basic education that for somebody that's new to it? How would you kind of educate somebody that's new to hospice? Or my experience with hospice is that no one who has experienced hospice, what they do, they think that, boy, I wish I knew about this a month ago, 2 months ago,
Absolutely.
3 months ago.
I hear that a lot.
Right. So now, can you explain why that is? Can you educate our listeners to why that is?
What are the basics and what are some of the misconceptions?
Probably the biggest misconception is that when hospice comes in, you're going to die the next day.
Like we're the Grim Reaper.
We are. And that literally is going to happen. And people are scared. I went through that about a year and a half ago with my own father. I'd been in hospice for years, and he was terminally ill, and I kept trying to get him to go on hospice. He was very resistant. nope, your mother can take care of me. Well, she had a heart attack. And I said, well, nope, she can't. Because if something happens to her, you're going to end up in a nursing home, and I know that's not what you want. Not that all nursing homes are bad. I don't mean to say that at all, but that was not what he wanted, and
some
I knew that.
Some people want to age in place.
Huh? Exactly.
Desire
exactly.
Of their heart.
And so I finally just said, you have to do this in order to get care so that we don't have mom back in the hospital again. Well, about a week later, he calls me on the phone. He goes, well, you were right. I should have done this weeks ago. I said, yeah, Dad. And he, you know, his life ended about 2 months later. He passed away, but it was very controlled, peaceful. They took good care of him. This was down in Florida, and it just went well. And I could see as a family member what peace that gave us is to have someone there. So that's a misconception, is that we're there just to, I kind of jokingly say, put a pillow over their head, because that's what some people think, that we're just there to, that's the end. We are not. We're there to make the quality of their life
the absolute best.
The best. And, you know, sometimes that means they get better and come off hospice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have had patients that have graduated.
Mm-hmm.
From what?
So what do you have to do to qualify?
You,
this is a government benefit, right? A federal benefit?
It's a federal government. It's under Medicare, also state Medicaid. They each have a little bit different guideline. And then also most insurance companies have a hospice benefit. Now, when they have a hospice benefit, but we have to follow the federal guidelines. That's the biggie. The feds control the guidelines. So you're going to get good care. But you have to meet different criteria. For each diagnosis has a little different criteria. And so that's what an assessment is. That's what, if you called and said, hey, I think my dad might need hospice, or my mom might need hospice. The doctor's wondering, maybe they do or don't. Can you come out and take a look? We can. We can't really do hands-on, but we can come out and talk to the family. A lot of times it's a dementia patient, and we can go out and sit with the family and the patient and just observe, and we can kind of see whether or not they're at that end stage. And that's what we're looking for in every diagnosis, is kind of the end stage.
Yeah, I've resisted doing this because I've told this story so many times, but it is so true, and it's so representative of what you're trying to convey, that hospice is not about dying. It's about quality of life.
Absolutely.
And the listeners, anyone who's listened to this show has heard this story. It's my mm-hmm. father. My father, who...
It's a good one, though.
Congestive heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
6 months after my mother died, he was in congestive heart failure. We took him to the hospital. They drew 17 pounds of fluid off. Mm-hmm. And he said, never again. I'm mm-hmm. never going to do this again. And so, Dad, he said, bring hospice in. My father had always, for 10 years, maybe 15 years, always complained about feeling bad. Just didn't feel well. No matter what we did, no matter what treatment, no matter who we took him to, no matter what we did, he was a very active man. That was not his nature. Long story short, hospice came in. The hospice nurse started the assessment, Denise. And through a series of visits and a series of telephone calls and a series of meetings and conversations with attending physicians, which mm-hmm. there was three, guess what? You know, multi-pharmacy, they took 12 to 13 prescriptions, and they pared it down to 5.
Exactly.
Immediately, he started feeling better.
Wow.
Immediately, he had a higher quality of life, and he lived 5 more years of quality life, not feeling bad. That's what hospice about. That's what
you nailed it.
That's what acute healthcare is supposed to be about. And that's the biggest problem in our healthcare delivery system, is the lack of coordinated communication and events. I mean, yeah.
Exactly.
It is. And everyone thinks it's so easy. Everyone thinks, okay, this is it, our system's not set up to do that.
Well, the problem sometimes in the home is the physicians are doing the right thing with the symptoms they're presented, and they're making good choices for the family, and the family nods, and then they get home and they have no idea what they're doing. Or they'll go to another physician and forget to tell them that physician A already prescribed something, and we don't have that. And even with electronic medical records, it's not going to stop that.
Yeah. What the different drugs do and stuff. That's
exactly. And sometimes, you know, an example is someone that's, they're going to be on for something else, but they're diabetic. Grandma's been a diabetic for 30 years. She's been on insulin, and they've got her on sliding scale. They've got her on all these different insulin doses. And all she does is drop her blood sugar constantly. Well, you get to a point, or does it really, you know, what are we doing here? It's so much easier to treat a high blood sugar within reason. I don't mean 700, but a higher blood sugar than it is to constantly chase and then have somebody have hypoglycemia, very low blood sugar, really hard to get them back from that. So we just take a look at the whole patient, and we're out there weekly. It makes a little difference. Physician's not in that home. They don't know what's in that cabinet with 1,200 medications.
And they don't know if they're even compliant with what they're on.
That's right. They don't. That's
exactly. Exactly.
So you all do that as a matter of course.
I was just going to say.
At the beginning of an intake. That's great.
I was just going to say that the one great thing, or one of the many great things about Aberdeen Place Hospice, is that communication factor, where our physician or nurse administrator will make sure that we're in constant communication. If the patient's physician decides to follow that patient, because we do give them an option, then we will communicate what's happening, what are any changes in medications and things like that, so that there aren't any horrific things that happen in between. Most of the time, the families, and correct me if I'm wrong, they just decide to just all care, just go with our physician, and they end their relationship. Well, not their relationship, but they end their physician following them. So they'll just come on board with us completely.
That's good. We, ladies, I told you we'd go quickly.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
Josephina, I'm gonna end with you. And you answered this, so you're going to have to just repeat it. But what is unique? What sets Aberdeen Place apart from the competition?
Aberdeen Place is a hospice organization that focuses on the family as a whole. They operate as a family. Everyone supports everyone in anything that we do, whether it's a community relations rep helping, for example, I'm fluent in Spanish. So if we have a patient and the nurse does not speak Spanish, I will be more than happy to follow that nurse into the patient's home and translate. We help each other because our main goal is to make sure that the patient's needs are being met. Not just the patient, but the family as a whole. Their spiritual, emotional, physical well-being is being taken care of and stabilized. So, you know, the name, as Denise mentioned earlier, it happens to be of a place in St. Louis in which the owners grew up, in which one person took care of another person. If there was a child running around and hurt themselves and needed to go to the hospital, it didn't matter if it wasn't the parent. If it was a neighbor that happened to see that, they would grab that child, take them to the ER. And that's kind of the mentality that they have when it comes to running this organization.
Well, so if anyone has questions or wants to reach you or thinks that they might have qualify for hospice or be ready for hospice, how do they get to you?
They can contact our main office at 678-878-3440, or they can even contact me on my cell phone at 404-900-4306, and we will respond within 10 minutes.
Good. Is there a website?
Their website is www.aphospice.com.
Great information. Thank you, ladies. Thanks, Denise.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, please.
Thank you.
And again, open, the invitation is open to come back. Denise, we'll do this again.
All right.
All right. Thank you both for being with us. We want to remind our listening audience that they can go to our website, eugeriaradio.com, and always listen to the rebroadcast of today's show or any show that we've done. And as we always do, we want to close and say that if the youth of this nation is its greatest natural resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.